April 6th marked the 100th anniversary of the United States' entry into World War I, and the Atlanta History Center has been commemorating this monumental event with four exhibits exploring the war. They're on their third now, and it's the only one completely curated by the Atlanta History Center. It's called Uncle Sam Wants You and features 60 rare World War I posters. Lois Reitzes spoke with the co-curators of the exhibit, the center's senior military historian Gordon Jones and education coordinator Kevin Edmiston. Gordon began by explaining the role of these posters.
Well, I think more than anything else, it was to make the causes of the war real and immediate to, even as one of the artists said, to the most unobservant people, right? So it was to get the point across of why we are in this war. Remember that prior to the declaration of war in April of 1917, there are a lot of Americans who wanted to stay out of the war. Woodrow Wilson had run in 1916 on the slogan, if he kept us out of the war. And now all of a sudden, we have to commit all of our resources and all of our population to this war effort that we don't know how long it's going to last. We could be in this thing for a very long time. So it was an effort to really get that emotional response from people that you need to give your last ounce to this war effort. It's so important. We have to save democracy. We have to save the world. And it's up to you.
So it went beyond recruiting.
Absolutely. You know, recruiting is only one part of this because the Selective Service Act of 1917 did draft soldiers, white and black, into the military. United States Marines did not actually have the draft. But the United States ended up putting 4 million men in uniform, 2 million of which went to Europe. And in 1918, at the end of the war, the British Army and the French Army together were about 4 million. And then you add 2 million U.S. troops, and you can really see how the balance shifted in favor of the Allies. Just the fact of the United States being there really shifted the balance, and Germany's collapse was not long in coming.
Who were some of the artists that the U.S. government hired to make these posters?
Well, there is one artist in particular, Charles Dana Gibson, who is the head of the Committee of Public Information's Pictorial Division. And he went out to recruit a bunch of artists who did campaigns, advertising campaigns for various magazines or illustrators, such as James Montgomery Flagg, who's probably one of the most famous for making the Uncle Sam, I Want You poster. He was an illustrator for a lot of magazines before the war, but really during the war, believed in the message. He made some of the early posters in the war, and of course, make Uncle Sam.
And would you describe that iconic image?
Yeah. So there's some dispute of where the origin of the Uncle Sam image comes from. Uncle Sam has been around since the War of 1812 and been depicted in very different ways. James Montgomery Flagg's, his inspiration was actually from a British poster that was almost the same design. Lord Kitchener, who is the Admiral or Minister of War in England, it was a picture of him pointing his finger saying, I want you to defend Britain or something like that. So Flagg took that idea, ran with it. And the story goes that he actually put a fake beard on and a top hat, and the image of Uncle Sam is actually a self-portrait of him much older. And that's where the image kind of comes from. And it's very iconic. Of course, it was used in World War I and used during World War II as well, and of course, it's still very popular today.
4th of July wouldn't be the same without it.
Exactly.
What other images are represented in your exhibition?
Well, we have a lot of images of a lot of humanitarian work. We have a lot of images about the YMCA and the Salvation Army, about people doing kind of their job overseas. We have images that have to deal with a lot of guilt and pressure.
What sort?
Well, back then, I mean, it wasn't just buying bonds. It was buying enough bonds. So a couple of the posters really talk about, you know, buying war stamps, buying war bonds, pictures of the children. There's one of my favorite posters is a picture of a little girl with pigtails, and she mentions that my daddy bought me a Liberty bond, has yours. So this idea of trying to guilt people into everyone has to go out and buy stuff. And There's these war stamps that came out during, because most bonds were very expensive, and war stamps were a little bit cheaper, and it was a way of getting people with lower incomes to finance the war. So not only are you maybe setting yourself to war, but now you're financially invested. So images of people maybe a little more impoverished lying up in lines to buy these stamps as a way of showing their support for the war. You know, it really, these had to attract a lot of different types of people. So, a lot of this marketing was really done in a very specific way.
And it was marketing, and it was marketing in a way that I don't think had ever really been done before. But one of my favorites is shows a sleeping Columbia, you know, the female version of Uncle Sam in her red, white, and blue kerchief. And she's resting comfortably, and the caption says, "Wake up, America. It's time to go to war. It's time to fight for something that's going to save the world. Wake up, America. You've been slumbering for too long." You know, I mean, how can that fail to to guilt you into doing something? You know, come on, get up, let's go.
Were the posters effective? Is there a way to measure?
Well, let's say this. If you go into that gallery and you look at these posters and you don't feel some kind of an emotional response, then there's something wrong. Okay? These things are brilliantly crafted messages with some really beautiful artwork that is just, in many cases, it is just spot on. And sometimes, you know, for us looking back after 100 years, you know, it looks rather clumsy and looks kind of primitive, you know, like propaganda. It's very obvious what the message was. But at the same time, we can't help but be, you're moved by this. Even now, you know, you see these images and you're moved by it. Just the Uncle Sam image that Kevin was referring to, that is still such a powerful image. If it weren't, it wouldn't still be in use. Mm-hmm. So we got to hand it to these guys. They were brilliant. They were very good at what they did.
I think these posters fed into hysteria that was created during the war. You know, for 2 years, we're told the most patriotic thing you can do is be neutral. In 1917, that all changes. We all have to fight in this war. So I think what it does is it feeds off the patriotism of the time, but also the hysteria of the time, where people believed in every street corner was a German spy. And, you know, so the fear of maybe saying things you weren't supposed to say in front of people you didn't know, or buying war bonds, buying enough war bonds, saving food. You know, it really, all these posters are really conscription posters in their own about doing your part, whether on the battlefield or at home.
Where did you find the posters?
These posters are almost all from the collection of one individual, a man named Walton Rawls, who lives here in Atlanta, but he has had a very interesting life from Madison Avenue and elsewhere. He's been in the publishing business, and he built this collection of posters over the years, and he published a book in 1988. It's called Wake Up America, World War I and the American Poster, and he had approached us, I guess it's probably been 10 years ago, and showed us his poster collection in his house. And then we remembered that when we came up to the centennial of the United States entry into World War I, we remembered Walton's collection. And so Walton has been a huge supporter of this exhibition, and it's to him that we really owe the credit of having saved these, not only collected them, but also literally having saved them, as in put the money into having them properly taken care of, mounted, framed, and so forth.
Were they all on display in his house?
No. This would be the first time that even he has seen them all on display in one place.
What's the connection to Georgia in this exhibition?
Well, Georgia was a very strategic military outpost during the war, just given the fact that all the railroads came here and you could easily mobilize soldiers to go overseas quickly. We have some artifacts that talk about the importance of Georgia during the war, especially the camps. There are about 11 military camps that were established in Georgia during the war. The two biggest that we feature in the exhibit is Camp Hancock, which was in Augusta, which trained the 28th Division from Pennsylvania National Guard Group, and Camp Gordon, which is now Peachtree Cab Airport. Camp Gordon was home of the All-American Division, the 82nd Division, which will go on to become the 82nd Airborne during World War II. And it's also the division of Alvin York, the famous Medal of Honor winner in World War I, was trained at Camp Gordon. So we have some artifacts talking about camp life and how these camps existed for only a matter of months, but had a huge impact on the war, sending hundreds of thousands of soldiers overseas trained here, right here in the state of Georgia.
And we also have some small artifacts that you don't want to miss. You know, there's some things like buttons and buckles and things that were actually excavated from the sites of these camps, which no longer exist. I mean, it's a Peachtree DeKalb Airport now. It's camp was where Camp Gordon was. We have a what was called a sweetheart pillow from Camp Hancock, which was a silk cover for a pillow that the young soldier who had been away from home for the first time and he wanted to send a gift back to his loved ones, he would buy that and he would send it back. And in these kinds of things, the sweetheart pillows and in establishing these training camps in general, we see in a certain way a dress rehearsal for World War II, because the same kind of things are going to happen in 1941-42 as are happening in 1917-18 with this massive buildup of an army that was, a tiny before the war. And then all of a sudden overnight, it's built up into this huge professional fighting force. And all of a sudden overnight, you have so many young men and women who are away from home for the first time on the biggest adventure of their lives possibly the greatest sacrifice that they can ever make. So I think people will see in this exhibition, they'll see a lot of shades of World War II that are happening much earlier than anyone realized.
What was the song? How are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Perry?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And at the same time, let's also remember that, this is 1917-18, and this is the height of the Jim Crow era. So even though the draft does take men of both white and black races, those men are kept strictly segregated, and there are white officers in command of those regiments. But what you find is that the regiments that were put under French control, black regiments under French control, were treated much better and were allowed many more opportunities to go fight and did some amazing work, whereas those that were actually under American command were really not allowed to do as much in the front. They were restricted to menial tasks, stevedores and hauling supplies and so forth. But there's some wonderful stories about the extent to which African Americans in this country, by serving in the armed forces in World War I, demonstrated that they were absolutely willing to fight for the country, to do their part. They were as American, as patriotic as any other person. And there's a wonderful poster in this exhibition, and it shows a black regiment marching off to war, and there is a black soldier, and he is kissing his sweetheart, and the American flag is waving over him, and the caption reads, "Colored man is no slacker."
Mm-hmm. That must have been difficult to find.
It was difficult to find. As a matter of fact, that's one of the only ones that we have in the exhibition that is actually a replica.
But at least it was made.
And at least we're honest in telling you that.
So we're 100 years away from having entered World War I, and beyond highlighting the centenary, what questions do you hope to evoke in visitors to this exhibition?
I think one of them, to me, is I think the nature of patriotism and the nature of prejudice. And we have a wonderful juxtaposition that Kevin came up with in the exhibition, where there is this very cartoonish, evil character of the Hun, the German, and it's very racist in the way that it's showing the Hun. And Germans, of course, had been in this country for hundreds of years, and now suddenly they're considered enemy aliens, and there's acts of public aggression against people of German descent. But then right next to that, you have a poster, and it's showing people of multiple ethnicities, joining the flag, joining the effort, and there's a caption that says, "Are you sure you're 100% American?" And it's essentially putting the shoe on the other foot. Now suddenly here are ethnicities, for example, from Southern and Eastern Europe that had been greatly discriminated against in the 1890s and early 1900s. And they're being encouraged to support the American flag. And they do respond, of course. But then on the other hand, you have this cartoonish figure of a German, you know, people who've been here for many hundreds of years, and they're suddenly the enemy. So what is that? How is that? How are we able to demonize groups of people so quickly?
I think, too, for me, is how an entire nation was mobilized to war, that the American contribution to the war was not just a military one. It was a humanitarian one. It was something that had to be done by everybody, and how the entire nation went to war overnight, essentially, that the Committee of Public Information, the committee that was supposed to develop most of these posters, was in existence a week after the war was declared, and how such a quick turnaround, how an entire country that wanted to remain the sidelines is now one of the active leaders in the war and active leaders in the peace as well.
Kevin Edmiston, Gordon Jones, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.